Blog Talk Radio.
Getting It Right with Dr. Bowles. Good afternoon. I'm so glad for you to join me. And if you have been following, I'm in a series, and the topic I'm doing is Social Justice Traveling Back to Dark Ages is the title for today. When I've talked about social justice and social injustice, I sort of look to the outside. You know, what is the world doing? What is the nation doing? In this particular presentation, I want to take a little time to talk about what can the people who feel as if there's a social injustice occurring, what can they do to improve the circumstance? I've been involved in quite a few things over the last few weeks. And, of course, if you're following the news, you've seen the situation going on in Flint, Michigan. It's hard to see that there isn't some kind of a pattern here. Flint, Michigan was in the news a year or so ago because of a killing of a young Black American by the Judicial Department. There was a lot of fever and rioting and uproar. And now the news are reporting that there is a problem with the water. If you follow media, it's just lead that is an issue. But what had happened, for those of you who have not been initiated to this news, there was a decision said to be due to the low income in the Detroit, Flint, Michigan area, that a decision was made to route water from a Flint River. Never been used as a water source in the past, but it was suddenly chosen to be used as a cost-saving gesture to route this water into the homes of people in that area. Now, just for information, those of you who know that Detroit was a heavily industrial city with car industry leading the way. It was often referred to as the Motor City. And whenever there's a industry, there has to be a venting of a number of metallics and corrosives and other drainages. I know when I was in Pittsburgh, there was a big thing with U.S. Steel, and many of these very large companies would literally have holding ponds that they would vent their wash-off into, because whatever was contained in the wash-off was something that was not ideal to be put into the water table or the water source. And some of these washouts had long-term consequences, such that when the water was drained from it, the sediment in these ponds were packaged in carboils or cans and buried. They never intended for it to get into use. Well, I don't know the circumstances of the Flint River. I don't have any data to speak from. However, the information that's coming out is that for 10 months or more, the water had been servicing customers, and a measure of lead in children sparked a great outrage, because some 30 to 40 years ago, it was documented by just a number of the academic institutions that lead had a very, very, very catastrophic effect on children and pregnant women and the elderly, anything from retardation to bone fractures to deformities in utero. And there was a massive cleanup all over the United States. They took lead out of fuels. So if you ever heard of leaded gasoline, the paints that were used in certain environments could not contain lead. Places like schools and daycares and private homes and apartment buildings, there were special efforts to seal the lead in the paint or scrape the lead from, and so forth. So in 2016, to say there is a poisoning of people, and one of the components highlighted is lead, to me smacks of bioterrorism more than just, oops, we made a mistake. When there is knowledge, it's difficult to claim an accident. That if you do it and you don't know is one thing, but when you have information and you act, it sounds almost like retribution. But, hey, that's outside of the purview for today's discussion. When I started thinking about social justice today, and I'm looking at academia, I've shared with a number of you that I am in the classroom again. I teach at a couple of universities, college level courses in the Central Louisiana area. And it focused me on different things that have to do with biodiversity and biology and so forth. And what I've come upon going back in the classroom is just how limited our young people are in their ability to read and achieve free thinking, that to give a test that required any kind of speculation or to give a test that requires them to build upon some information they already have sends absolute shockwaves. I had a student come to me a couple of semesters ago and said, "Oh, your course is hard." And when I asked why, she says, "You don't tell us where to go and find the answers." I wasn't sure how to respond, but my answer was, "I give you the answers every time I lecture." So in looking at today's discussion of social justice, I think that we, those of us who are designated in this United States of America as minorities or people of color, or more poignantly, the Black Americans, if we do not insist on learning and teaching our children how to read, we are in fact condemning ourselves to be traveling back into the dark ages. Why do I say this? When one relies on someone else to explain or to tell you of something, then you give them the authority over you because their explanation is in accordance with their own desires. That if you can't go and get the information firsthand, or if you can't establish that the information being provided is in fact accurate, you are without hope. You're at the mercy of the message carrier. What I have noticed is that a lot of young people, when I say young, I'm going to say under the age of 30, rely heavily on peer information. They go to Facebook, they go to Twitter, they go through all of this, and the peer information is tantamount to gossip. That, did you know what happened to this one yesterday? Well, immediate occurrences are important. You have to live day to day. But if you have no ability to find out what is the structure, what is the premise of, why is this how it's done, how is it explained that this is accepted, then you fall into a category of manageable. You become herdable. If I tell you this is trending and you believe what your chatter is among your peers, then you come aboard without questioning the validity or the sensibleness. I've looked at some of the clothing that is now on the market, and I've actually forced myself, although I don't really enjoy shopping, to go into some of the fashion shops or watch some of the television shopping networks. And I've seen some absolutely ridiculous fashions that they call fashion. Why would a woman want to wear clothes that hangs out on 5 and 6 levels? I mean, you have a T-shirt that has a tail in the back, and you have a vest that has 2 horns in the front, and you have a T-shirt that they call kerchief hem. And you walk around looking like Raggedy Ann. I haven't figured what convinced women that was flattering. They have shoes with everything cut out, but yet there are shagginess around the ankle. They call things Trojan sandals, and they put laces all the way up to your knee. They have shoes so high that you can't really walk in them. They put a surface on the shoe that doesn't allow your foot to take a normal step, so you're actually stomping around on a platform never intended to fit a foot. And yet, says some other name, it's a Gucci, then suddenly it's okay and it's fabulous. I am really, really afraid that there are groups of young people, and unfortunately so many Black Americans who are driven by the trend-setting things, and they don't investigate who set that trend. It makes me remember that in the art world, when this young man, and I don't even remember his name and I don't care to, came out with putting Campbell's soup labels in a frame, and they made him into this big deal, and he was doing the most trivial, foolish thing, but someone thought it was art, and suddenly he was getting millions of dollars doing a very banal thing. We are at great risk of slipping back into the dark ages. If we, and it has already begun, particularly in the state of Louisiana, and I've had so many question why I have chosen to remain here in Louisiana, and I haven't really answered that question to my satisfaction. But every time I pick up something and read it, Louisiana has been rated 44 out of 50 as a quality of education in America. And a number of the people in the Department of Education and other positions talk about how the state has received an F in this or D in that. And they make an observation that it is the minorities in the state of Louisiana who are hardest hit. And I've talked with a number of people and even gone to the capital of Louisiana, which is Baton Rouge. I've talked to people in the Department of Education. The statistics that I read and have shared with you, that 66.1% of all students in Louisiana in the public school who do not drop out do not get a diploma. And that, to me, just really made me shake my head. How can you stay in class, attend school, and when you complete those, you get a piece of paper that says a certificate of attendance. And no one's outraged. Part of what I read today in preparing this, it was a comment made that, unfortunately, Louisiana has not expected much from their high school students, and a comment was made by Superintendent White saying what is damning is that when Louisiana talks about kids' basics, they're not talking about basics according to other states. In other words, basics for Louisiana is substandard performance. And I don't know why the parents are not outraged. I have attended a number of job fairs, and the number one complaint that I've heard in most of the industries in Central Louisiana is that when they get someone who comes to be employed, they have to give them a long learning curve because they're unable to read and quickly assess problems necessary on the job. And in my looking at why is it important to be in school, and reading is fundamental, and you say, okay, it's good to read. But if you pause and think about it, reading also forces us to listen. If you've ever been in a dynamic of academia where students are not well-schooled, let's just say, very illiterate, and I have. I actually got my substitute teaching credentials in Rapides so that I could go firsthand and evaluate what's going on in the high school systems in Central Louisiana. And students who are disruptive, students who have a lot to say when you're trying to teach, are generally those who can't read. They're those who've never learned to be silent and listen. And in looking at what reading does, reading exercises the part of the brain that trains us to absorb, that if you're not hearing it but seeing it, it triggers a whole other system, mechanistic system in the brain. That visual learning is very different from auditorial learning. And if you've ever tried to learn a language, you'll see what is used. They'll use pictures to help you understand a word. And when you see the picture and recognize the picture, and then they give you the word, the fixation of understanding is immediate. There's no need for further explanation. But when we only hear it or if learning is sensationalized. I laugh because that's what happens when you look at many of the games on the apps. They have little boop, 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 all these little music, and I was trying to do a game, and that was distracting to me. I found it irritating, and then I learned later that is exactly the attraction for young people, that they require that extra stimulation. And when I did further examination, I found out that that whole gambling industry, the gaming industry, really go after that particular stimuli. I read and often studied in silence. I would go and be quiet or put something in my ears and concentrate on what I was reading. And only since I've become an adult have I tried to acclimate some of my reading in areas where there's some distraction. But what I find is background noises and little sounds when I'm really trying to grasp a concept or when I'm trying to really remember something, it's impossible. So I started to think, if all of the learning of modern-day young people involves some flashing light, some movement, some sound, some background noise, are we not creating a situation where silent learning is difficult or impossible? I have a grandniece who is 7 years old, and she doesn't enjoy reading. She's very intelligent, no question. She has a sense of manipulation. She does make-believe with her dolls. But when that part of the brain that requires structured understanding and patient listening, she has no tolerance. And that's really the word, tolerance. That reading forces us to slow down. It forces us to listen to our own mind. It was an important thing when I was in elementary to do phonetics, that you learn to pronounce, and we went through little phonetic exercises, and we did poems. I mean, the whole concept of doing nursery rhymes where at the end of the sentence the word rhymed, and then it became more modernized, and there was Dr. Seuss and Sesame Street, and again, they used rhymes. They went into the animation with the Cookie Monster and all of the adaptation of puppets, and it was still with the intent of visual and visual learning with auditory learning. Well, now that we've moved to cell phones and PCs and notebooks, the ability to have a bright color blinking and a repetitive, nonsensical sound and the immediate reward of a noise has, in my opinion, created a person or a young person who does not rely on their own ability, who cannot function without this added stimulation. There's a lot of discussion when you talk about nutrition, about sugar, and how it winds children up. And then if you go to medicine, we talk about Ritalin, and we talk about how to wind the kid down. So it's almost as if we have progressed into a push-button everything, that we feed a child Frosted Flakes and Kix and all kind of sugary foods, send them off to school, and the teacher complains the child can't sit still, doesn't pay attention. So we rush into the doctor, and we get Adderall, and we get Ritalin and all kinds of downers, and put them back into a classroom where, because they spend 8 to 10 hours watching video games where the part of the brain is hypersensitized with noises and lights and immediate gratifications. I looked at, I'm actually studying Spanish, and I'm hoping to become literate. I want to have a high sense of fluency, and I've mastered some of the books, and I can write statements, but speaking and creating sentences require a whole level of understanding. So I've subscribed to a couple of the teach yourself language tools, and I literally had to deactivate part of the sounds that went with the training. every time you got something right, there was this cheering and celebration to the point that it was distracting to me. And it caused me to think, is this what learning is? That you don't have to do much to get saluted, that you don't really have to meet a goal, you just get one thing right and there's bells and whistles and celebration. Is that not creating a monster? If I have to be congratulated for the smallest bit of effort, what causes me to want to give my best? If anything is enough, how do you get more? I think about the movie when they said Karate Kid. I was very much watching that because I have a respect for martial arts and the ancient times in China and other Asian countries, Asian and African countries, are older than the Americas. And seeing some of the wisdom that is still in place in martial arts and certain religions, ancient religions, fascinate me. And what intrigued me in that movie, for those of you who never saw the original one, is that the young boy came to who he saw as a master in martial arts, and he really wanted to achieve that mastery. And what struck me most is that the duties he was given had nothing to do with the end point that he wanted to achieve. And I look at how intolerant our young people are. In the movie, the master had the young man strip the deck. It was a flat surface, so he was essentially sanding the wood. And once he had done that, and the young man was waiting for approval and salute, he was given the task to finish the wood. And again, it required quite a bit of manual labor. But what in reality was happening in the wisdom of the elder, he was preparing the muscles of this young man, that obviously the young man was thin and slight, and his muscular abilities could not yet perform the duties of the masters. And so the master, recognizing this deficiency, assigned the young man a practical task to achieve what he knew he ultimately needed. Not only did he develop the muscles, but he was teaching the young man routine. He was teaching him patience. And ultimately, it paid off when he went to get his final training. I look at our today young people. There are no chores. And I may have spoken on this before, but those who lived on a farm or live on a farm or live on a ranch, move livestock or move hay, mow grass, there's an activity. Today's young people, at least from the ones that I know, sleep until noon or later, get up and eat their sweet Cocoa Puffs or whatever, and get on the television or their electronic game and start doing whatever it is that they're enjoying. It's Candy Blast and Cookie Monster or whatever they are. And then to the health care nation, they start to ask, why are our children so obese? And why are our children having diabetes and hypertension? And how is it that they will die before their parents? And parents are running around saying, what pill can I give my child? And how can I get them to be reducing? And meanwhile, every meal of the day is some processed food, that there are nothing natural in the household. In the course that I will be teaching in March, human biology and nutrition has 20 chapters in the book. And when I read through them, it's all very academic. And the person who wrote it did, I'm sure, a very good job. But what it dawned on me is if I teach human biology and nutrition, then it has to be something practical. So part of what I have been really, really, really struggling with is how to teach menu planning, how to teach meal planning. I've taught this course a year ago, and relied very heavily on the chapters provided in the book. But what I learned, my being the student of my students, is many of the young people have never cooked a meal. I found that shocking, but then I had to reflect. Since their lifetime, they've had McDonald's and Burger King and Popeyes and all the different pizzas places, and they grew up with the drive-through that mom and dad simply went there for breakfast and you got your muffin, and then lunchtime you got your something, and at dinner you went and picked up something else. And the concept of live at home or stay at home mom, or God forbid the term housewife, they didn't cook. And when I would talk about nutrition, it was as foreign to them as if I were talking about some medical term. And when I was trying to teach protein and carbohydrates and lipids and fiber, they were just words. They had no sense of it, because what that meant is after classroom, go to a Burger King and get a biggie size of this and that, because that was a meal. And what I've been striving to do in this course coming up is to debunk their understanding of what a meal is. That, in effect, going to fast food, they've been robbed of a freedom, because it's called a children's meal doesn't make it a nutritious children's meal. There is a kind of a brainwashing there, that if I walk up and say I want a number one, it is the food I'm about to eat, but it doesn't constitute a balanced meal. If I'm consuming close to 2,000 calories and 50% of it is fat, and I have almost zero fiber, and the other 50% is carbohydrate, then I've really missed the mark of what it is to be human and to seek good nutrition. And if that's all I've known all my life, if that's what mother did, then it is a very difficult and daunting task to introduce the reality. Reality too often is what we are familiar. It doesn't mean that's what there is. So it'll be a small spark in a world of darkness, but the success that I had in the last teaching was to uncover the lack of knowledge, to uncover the acceptance of what has been a commercialized, advertised concept of food. And some of the participants would make these sounds when we talked about the slaughter of meat. And one young lady who was in the class was outraged at something we were discussing, and one of the foods had to do with the animal tongue. And she gave a very bad response. And I asked her, I said, do you like steak? And she said, yes. I said, do you know that is the rump? And there was this shock, this kind of horror, almost as if I had hurt her feelings, to have pointed out to her that things she eats with a name of bacon is really a body part of an animal. Or if she's eating ham, it's a body part of an animal. That in her reality, she was so removed from the farming aspect, from the source of her food, that she could not fathom that what she was consuming on a regular basis and calling delicious had anything to do with a living, functioning animal. So, are we traveling back to the dark ages? Are we losing ground because we don't read and we don't investigate for ourselves? Is the advertisement and the glitter and the noise and the sounds confusing us so badly that we don't know what direction we're moving? And instead of moving forward, we're moving backwards. How will we ever know? If you can't read, you can't read a map. And if you don't read, listen. Of the problems that are coming. So with that, I say that there's a social justice that is having a requirement of self, that each one of us have the responsibility of reading and learning for ourselves and encouraging children and young people to do the same. And with that, I thank you so much for listening. And until next week, take care.